Hello, welcome to the Stunt My Fault Theoshi Podcast. It's not popular. Episode 133. My name is Justin.
And mine's Helen.
Sometimes we have to go straight into not what we've been up to the past couple weeks and into other things that's happened in the last few weeks, because we got fall anime 2021 stuff to talk about. So,
and also just an absolute crap ton of licenses.
And that too, but we always seem to get an absolute crap ton of licenses, especially when conventions happen. Oh yes, that's right, conventions happened.
I just had a moment of panic when I was like, did Jane Novel Club license anything new in the past 2 weeks that we forgot to include?
The answer is we've already covered
okay.
it. So, all right. We're going to get right into it. So, obviously, pandemic still going on. In Japan, they had canceled the Tokyo Comic Con 2021. They are planning events for 2022, but we'll see when exactly that's going to happen. But then in some either good news or is it too early news, they had already lifted the state of emergency in 19 prefectures back in September in Japan. So there are some states that are still in a quasi state of emergency, and it's obviously, I think, prefectures that are still in a state of emergency. So it's not everywhere, but either that is a good sign or a bad sign. It's hard to tell. But you would like to think, it's been now a couple months now, the vaccine should be rolling out. I think, I have to assume things are a little bit better than before. So let's just hope for the best, and obviously hope for the best elsewhere as well.
And then moving on to news. This one's kind of weird news, but we put it in the news section because it was a little more important.
And then I put this, it's basically all three here, news, streaming news, and weird news, rare.
Yeah, so one of the shows that was set to start airing the season is World's End Harem, which I wasn't interested in, I don't think you were interested in, but Nemo was going to cover it in his weekly columns.
I was like, hey, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do it. And the universe conspired and said, no, you don't have to do it.
Because we're just saying, you're ruining the surprise. Well, the surprise is that first episode aired on that Friday in Japan. And then the anime's production committee has delayed episode 2 and later to January 2022 due to a need to, quote, closely examine, unquote, the anime production. So episode 1 aired as scheduled, but it's not going to stream. So I don't think Crunchyroll even got it, since they were supposed to stream it this season. And instead, we're all now just waiting to see what happens in January, because, folks, that's bad. You make it to the first episode airing, and then something is going on where you're like, we need to just pause this whole thing. Like, Justin and I can think of a couple of examples of other shows where they got, like, I think it was, like, Regalia got, like, 3 episodes out. Modern Machin got like 10 out. You were saying there was something last season with like Suki Pro or Idolish 7.
It was this past season where Suki Pro went on for a couple of, this season 2 went on for a good couple episodes, but then they had to stop because COVID happened.
Yeah, but this is, we got through one episode and then we had to stop.
We're
not saying it was COVID, so we genuinely don't know if it's a COVID related production issue or whatnot, but
there are many options.
And it's still rather impressive.
I do want to point out, first of all, I do apologize for ruining the surprise, but at the same time, this was just like one of the wildest news stories. Well, it should be, because I can't even think of the last time or any time where a show literally was up to start this season and then say, okay, we're going to show one episode and bounce. That's it. We're done for the season.
Yeah, I think every other example we can think of, the shows have gotten like at least 3 episodes out.
Yeah, and then obviously like some shows like we talked about on March and Imagine, where that just had a hellish production issues.
Yeah, that one was, it was clear it was deteriorating as it went on, which is different from something has gone wrong in the state of Denmark at the start.
But I mean, I feel like, Just for a large part, like I said, many things could have happened with this. Like, obviously, production issues in general, where they maybe have just couldn't finish stuff well in time, and this just was going to permeate throughout the project. So it's like, yeah, I had to delay it. But then obviously, the content of World End Terror was probably could have potentially been an issue too. We always had the interspecies reviewers issue, so it's like that's obviously in the minds of anybody. But then, obviously, as you said, COVID could also be an issue. In general, there are plenty of things that could have happened with this. But I just want to say that this basically is a this really just caps just one of the strangest years in terms of like anime production. Like, it's just all across the board. It just seems like it's been really awful. Excuse me, it's been really awful this year. Because remember, we even got like shows that were delayed into this season. So like we talked about Mushoku Tensei, the Isekai Assassin anime, those were supposed to air in the summer. That got moved to fall.
Also Banished from the Heroes Party.
And Banished from the Heroes Party. And I think Land of Liddell was supposed to air this season, but now that got pushed back. Same with Chi Professor to the People of the Wise Man. That got pushed 2022. There was just a lot of stuff that got delayed. So we talked about started the year, a whole bunch of winter anime had to air because of COVID, and that was just so much anime. And obviously, like the more anime that aired in this winter and the spring, it was starting to deteriorate. Now you have summer where you have stuff that there was not that many stuff that aired this summer, and now you got stuff that got pushed back to fall, and then you got pushed back to winter. I don't know. It's been a mess. Production scheduling for a lot of titles this year. You can even see like for certain shows where even the animation was just kind of struggling. So I don't know. It's really tough. So yeah, Worlds in Harem is just basically the cherry, I guess, on top, because you really just don't have one episode air and then just delay like that. That's not good.
So we will have to wait until January. That is to keep making our "Why the Last Anime Man" jokes. Although I did watch the ANN, it was like part of their after show thing where they were showing all the trailers for the new season. And I think for this one, they said, we can't actually show this one on stream. We're going to show you an edited version of it because we do not want to get kicked off YouTube. I think that was for this show.
No, that's fair. No, that's fair enough. Because yeah, YouTube, Housey is, they're watching. They're watching for that. Yeah.
In far more wholesome news, we had New York Comic Con this past weekend, which meant that stuff was going on, including the Harvey Awards, and Chainsaw Man took away the Best Manga Award at the Harvey Awards, and they also inducted Rumiko Takahashi into their Hall of Fame. This is separate from the Eisner's Hall of Fame she was inducted into a couple of years ago. These are two separate awards, but that's pretty cool. And Justin told me this, I didn't know this, that apparently only one other mangaka has ever been inducted into the Harvey Hall of Fame, and that is Osamu Tezuka, like 30 flippin' years after his death. So, at least they're getting a little more timely with it.
Well, I guess as manga enters the collective consciousness of comic people, I guess.
I mean, we can keep saying that, but like the actual manga boom, and I've seen like the numbers for it, it's even bigger than what we've got right now, was like 2006. So like 15 years ago at this point, anyone who's still like, oh, I don't know about this newfangled manga thing is just fucking stupid. Clearly incapable of reading the room or books. And then if you want me to keep talking, then let's see. Right Stuff / Nozomi Entertainment has launched a Kickstarter for a dub of Dirty Pair. For a dub of Dirty Pair. Let's see. I know Dirty Pair's had a couple of iterations. Is this the OVAs or the TV series they're dubbing?
I have to assume this is a TV series.
For the main television anime. Yep. And so it definitely looks like they're going to meet the goal if they haven't as of this recording.
I think I saw they did.
Yeah, it went super fast. So it's definitely a bigger goal than they've had for their past anime dub Kickstarters. It was like $275,000. But yeah, it's cool that it looks like it's going to get funded. That's always great. And Retro Crush and Crunchyroll have both also started streaming the Dirty Pair TV series, obviously in a bit of like, you know, marketing synergy. But Retro Crush, Where is my goddamn story of Sayonkoku?
Wow, we didn't even get to the streaming section for this, Helen. What the heck?
Listen, I'm going to make this into a running joke until the universe complies.
God, incredible. We didn't even get to the streaming news, and she's already just like, Retro Crush, you're my mortal enemy.
Just going to walk up to them at a con and be like, so, what did y'all do behind the scenes? Or what did you not do behind the scenes when you licensed this?
Gonna walk to their booth at a convention and just harass them almost for an hour.
Like, you know those pictures of, like, the JoJo stands and, like, the JoJo characters walking towards each other giving off that energy?
Yes,
yeah, that's gonna be me.
Maybe. Maybe. Incredible. And I guess you put this in here too about Jujutsu Kaisen, where it jumped 650% to 55 million copies since the anime came out.
To be clear, we're talking about manga sold. That's what's jumped by 650% since the anime debuted, which comes out to 55 million copies, which is just, goddamn, that's a lot of copies.
Yeah, the power of a good, or at least a solid, anime adaptation.
You mean the power of everybody glomming on to the latest Shonen Jump hit, you know, and going, oh, cool.
Wait. We have Tokyo Revengers. Come on.
The latest, you know, boys fighting, you know, manga to anime adaptation.
Just saying.
Oh, cool. It's got dudes in it.
Apparently hot dudes. I don't know. I guess that was what was Pete and said for Tokyo Revengers.
I don't know. I've looked at the dudes of both Jujutsu Kaisen and Tokyo Revengers, and I would not qualify any of them as hot. Hot messes, maybe, but that's a different appeal. Justin. There's a Venn diagram but there are in fact two different circles in it.
That appeals to people like that, I guess. I don't know. All right, so yeah, we have that. Now we're gonna move on to a couple important people had passed away in the past couple weeks. So we didn't cover this the last episode. The Belladonna of Sadness and Cleopatra director Eiichi Yamamoto passed away. Let's see, how old? At some point, my iPad will work properly.
I recall he was getting up there, since I think it was his granddaughter or his daughter who announced it at a screening that he had passed away recently.
Yeah, and in fact, the article even has like two different ages. So they're not even sure. That's interesting. I guess. No official age for Yamamoto. That's interesting.
But I think he was upwards of 80 at least.
Yeah, he's in the 80s. It was in the 80s. Yeah. He was old, yeah. Huh. But yeah, I think everybody has heard of Belladonna Sadness. That's why I think people know about, and Cleopatra as well. So that's unfortunate. This one, Eden Zero, the anime director, Yushi Suzuki passed away essentially at the start of September, but it was announced, I think, at the the final episode of Eden Zero when that aired. That's when they announced that he had passed away.
And he was much younger. This is one of those ones where you look at and you go, "Was this overwork?"
Well, it doesn't say what age, but you imagine he was just basically getting his start in the industry with some of the titles.
Yeah,
he was a key animator for just a couple, like Fairy Tale, Valve Wave, Pretty Rhythm, or Dream, and he only directed like certain episodes of Fairy Tale and Log Horizon, the recent Log Horizon. So you can imagine he was pretty young.
Yeah, this was his first full series, and if you look at the dates for those other shows, like I'm guessing under 50 probably.
Yeah. Yeah, just really sad. We have the voice actor French Tickner, who passed away. Then obviously, actually, I'll leave that to you. I do want to point out, I think I'll leave the other one to you. I do want to put for French Tickner. He was a voice of Watari in Death Note, and Doze Zabi for Gundam. He had passed away at 91 years old, so he definitely lived a good long life. Passed away. Okay, it doesn't say how he passed away, but yeah, passed away recently.
Yeah, and we also had the Golgo 13 manga creator Taco Saito passed away. He was 84, and it was from pancreatic cancer, which is usually a killer. He had said before his death that he wanted the manga to continue on without him, and the Saito production group of artists will continue to work with the assistance of the editorial department of the magazine. If he was 84, I imagine that he had a lot of help by this point making the manga, so hopefully folks can continue on in a way that feels right.
Yeah, it's had some very big like these manga deaths this year. Although for Takao Saito, I mean, 84,
mm-hmm.
he's been drawing for decades and just a long time, and there's just one property too. I mean, he's actually, they did say he's done other like shorter series, but obviously everybody knows when we're creating Gogo 13. And all of the crazy types of assassinations he's done over the generations. So, I mean, he's obviously entertained lots of people for a long time. So, I'm sure we will all miss his contributions to the manga industry in general.
And then our final death is the Dragon Quest composer Koichi Sugiyama, passed away at 90 due to septic shock, which is not a cause of death you often see listed. And should probably put in some trigger warnings here. Quoting from the ANN article, Sugiyama's legacy remains marred by controversial statements, often echoing Japanese conservative and right-wing political rhetoric. Let's see. He said that the comfort women were like happy-go-lucky Korean prostitutes, denied the Nanking Massacre. He has decried LGBTQ individuals as unproductive because they do not have children. So yeah, this guy was a piece of shit. Poster crab raid videos, everyone. And septic shock is, as I understand it, not a pleasant way to go either.
Yeah, you obviously, for video game people and those who played Dragon Quest, they were known, but it does not sound like he got better with age. Seriously.
Sounds like I would not want to be in a room with him, and he probably wouldn't have wanted to be in a room with me either. Behold my unproductiveness in not having children.
So, with that, we're going to move over to some licenses, which, well,
we did have New York Comic Con, so quite a few people were bringing out the stops. And then some other folks had their usual, let's announce a whole bunch of stuff on Twitter. Yay. Seven Seas will continue announcing licenses every Wednesday until, well, they haven't told us what their demand is yet, actually.
When?
We don't know how it's
when are you
going to
stop? Incredible, Seven Seas. Incredible. So I guess we'll start with Viz. Got two, Viz and Yen Press. They basically had announcements at New York City Comic Con this past weekend. So for Viz, they licensed, obviously, more Junji Ito. This one, the Liminal Zone. This one was kind of fast. Takashi Shina and Rumiko Takahashi's Yashihime.
Did that one just start serializing?
I feel like it just started serializing in Japan. So this is kind of fast. I mean, all these are coming out summer 2022. So, I mean, it's still going to be a while, but still. Business is like, oh, we got to do a new more Inuyasha, or more a version of Yashihime involving the Inuyasha crew and everything. Boom, bring it over. Okay. Bokuro Ogaki's Crazy Food Truck, Yusei Matsui's The Elusive Samurai. This is the Weekly Shonen Jump title that's gonna get the nice, oh, we're gonna go from digital to print. Nice, cool, excellent. Nana Yukimori's Kuba Won't Let Me Be Invisible. This was another Shonen Jump Manga Plus thing that's going to now also go from digital to print. Siu Sakura Tani's Rooster Fighter. I'm pretty sure we talked about this in one of the weird news sections at some point in the past. I'm pretty sure we did. Akisa Saike's Ghost Reaper Girl. If you say, what kind of name is that? Well, this is actually the former pen name of the Rosario to plant, plus Vampire creator.
Oh, that explains so why now, the picture for it on the Shonen Jump website looks surprisingly horny.
Yeah. And I guess this makes sense because obviously that title did pretty well for Viz, so it was not a surprise they would do digital print for this. Kazuki Takahashi's Marvel Secret Reverse, Oto Toda's To Strip the Flesh,
which looks like it's got a lot of, like, trans themes in it. So I've already seen some folks on Twitter going, ooh, yes, this looks interesting and very relatable to my real life.
Gonna have, I think this is the rest of all Shonen Jump stuff. Tsuyumi Obata and Takeshi Obata, this Death Note short stories. Gonna have, obviously bringing over more Naruto novels. So you got Kakashi's story, the Sixth Hokage, and the Failed Prince. Sasuke's story, the Uchiha and the Heavenly Stardust, and Uzumaki Naruto and the Spiral Destiny. So that's coming out next summer 2022. And so is the art book for the Promised Neverland. This is just formerly how Posca Demis is the Promised Neverland art book world. So all that's coming out summer 2022. Meanwhile, you got the titles that did not quite make the cut for Shonen Jump or for Viz in terms of bringing it over to digital or print. Some of it is obviously makes sense because these are canceled. Kakazu's Our Blood Oath and Rio. Well, okay, this is the only one that has been canceled in Japan. So that's as expected. These other two, maybe not so much, although for Ryo Nakama's High School Family, it's kind of a, if I'm not mistaken, it's like a gag series. I don't know if that would actually do that well for digital to print. So it makes sense to go for digital only for this. But then you have Kenta Shinohara's Witch Watch. And that's the only one that's unfortunate that it's not going to go from digital to print. But these three are supposed to be coming spring 2022.
It's funny. I heard that apparently one of the new VTubers that just premiered, I think one of the Nijisanji, apparently like one of the hashtags for her followers to post is like Witch Watch. And it's like, oh no, that's the same hashtag that people use for talking about this manga. And it kind of makes me want to give that manga a second shot just so I can spam that hashtag with manga pictures the way it should be. So, like we said, Yen Press also had some announcements at NYCC. They are bringing over Mahiro Kikuchi and Tsubata Nozaki's Your Forma, which is a light novel, so that will be under the Yen On imprint. Yuyu Takahashi, Tali, and Tali's Mons Taboo. That's one of those words that works better in print than it does spoken. Shinya Shima's Lost Lad London, Taipei Nagatsuki, Minori Sugihara, and Shinichiro Otsuka's ReZero, The Frozen Bond. Kafka Asagiri and Sango Harukawa's Bungo Stray Dogs Stormbringer light novel, and the Dead Apple manga, which is drawn by Ganji. Sword Art Online, Abic Artworks, Wander's Art Book. Let's see. Oh, shoot, I was about to make a joke about these are being some of the weird names, but I actually don't know Korean, so I'm not going to make that joke. Wukjaka and Usonan's A Returner's Magic Should Be Special, which is a manhwa. Whale and Micha's Why Relena Ended Up at the Duke's Mansion, also manhwa. Reno and Yunsul's Daughter of the Emperor, manhwa. And they're also going to be releasing Turtle Me and Fuyuki 23's The Beginning After the End graphic novel in print, which is currently being published on Tapas. You see, I've been an anime fan long enough that I can look at, like, Japanese pen names and tell when someone is just being a troll with them, but I don't know enough Korean to make those judgments yet.
And then, obviously, Yen Press continuing to jump on that bandwagon of getting more manhwa. It's interesting how they used to do manhwa, but then they stopped for a bit, and now they're...
Yeah, because this is, like, like the second or third go of the English manga market trying to also bring manhwa over. Since Yen Press did it before... And I know Tokyo Pop was also trying it about the same time. And I'm not sure if that was the first attempt or the second attempt. But hey, it's cool because, you know, when Seven Seas puts out their licensing surveys and asks about webcomics, I've got a couple of, you know, webtoons I've just been shoving over there and being like, hey, please bring this to me in print. I would love it. Please.
Yeah, the options are now, they're down going up, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And then obviously more ReZero, not surprised. Look, they're just going to bring over every version of Bungo Stray Dogs that exists. Every version. If they wanted to, they would have brought over the Doujinshi too, but that will require lots of effort and actually probably not all of them. But yeah, they're basically committed to Bungo Stray Dogs. So yeah, an interesting set of licenses for them. As always, Seven Seas, they just... What do we do with Seven Seas? They're just going to announce... New titles every Wednesday, Helen. For perpetuity. They're never going to stop. They're just never going to... I'm fearing they're just never going to stop, Helen.
Like I said, I was going to make a until morale approves joke, but I honestly have not mentioned what their demands are to stop licensing new things. Justin and I looking every month at the number of things set to be released and just weeping.
Looking at, like, wait, how many titles is this one company releasing this month?
Justin is starting to send more and more 1 a.m. texts of being like, Yen Press is supposedly releasing 130 volumes of stuff in November. Please kill me. Well, he's not saying that. He's just saying he might just
First of all, you didn't even get it wrong. First of all, it wasn't even 130. They might do 130 by December at the rate they're going, because they've been going up each month. Oh, it's going to go 71 this month. Okay, no, they're obviously going to fix that. Oh, but it's now 93 this particular month. What? But they're definitely going to change that. No, next month's going to be like 100 plus, and just crying.
Like, I just took a few days off of work, and even that is not nearly enough time for me to start making a dent in just the review backlogs I've got.
Incredible. And obviously companies decide they want to license more stuff. Granted, they're ways away from coming, but still. Meanies. Anyways. We did cover the digital license for Yen Press last time. Never mind. Back to Seven Seas. So they licensed Toko Amikawa and Juan Hachipitsu's Seven Time Loop. The villainess enjoys a carefree life married to her worst enemy. This is light novel, so it's going on an airship. Got Seiko Arisawa's Box of Light. This is a one volume series. Sal Jang's Black and White Tough Love for the Office. If not mistaken, this is the Yuri office.
It's like two ladies. I think they beat each other up and they also work in the same office or something.
And have angry sex, basically.
I'm sure this appeals to a lot of people.
I definitely saw the quote tweet saying yes.
Yes, I saw those too. Yes, those were also on my timeline.
They license Sora Akino Sakurai-san Wants to Be Noticed, Yoro Sumino's I Will Forget This Feeling Someday, because, well, similar to how Yen Press is going to snap up every Bogo Stray Dogs that exists, Seven Seas is committed to snapping up every type of novel that Yoro Sumino is putting out. That is, no other company is taking it. It's pretty clear at this point.
For those like me who keep forgetting who this name is, this is the guy who wrote I Want to Eat Your Pancreas and other titles.
I think
this is not some sort recently of like pancreatic extended universe or anything. He's just either prolific or has a big like back catalog of stuff to be licensed.
Yeah, and Seven Seas is committed to bringing all that out for English audiences to enjoy. And then their last license, as of today, because obviously we have Wednesday coming up, they're gonna allow some more stuff. I'm just gonna cry again. Kuromoe, Steam, Reverie, and Amber. This one I'm probably gonna pick up because it's art book and a short story manga collection, so that sounds interesting to me. So I'll probably be getting that one.
Yeah, that one caught my eye as well, since it looks like some cool steampunk stuff. And then speaking of digital licenses, Kodansha has announced their new digital licenses, and y'all know the drill by now. New series every Tuesday. Love After World Domination by Hiroshi Noda, with art by Takahiro Wakamatsu, that started on October 5th. Ikos Our Bodies Entwining Entwined, which starts October 12th. Tesla Node by Masafumi Nishida, with Tadayoshi Kubo doing the story and Kota Sanomiya doing the art, which is, I guess it's based off a light novel series?
No. This is the weirdest project, this is the weirdest mixed media project ever.
I know that the anime looks like ass.
Tesla Note started as a manga and weekly shonen magazine either late last year or early this year. And I was like, wait, that's gotta be one of the fastest to anime or stuff like that. No, that was the weirdest thing ever. It was like, oh, that was kind of fast how they got the anime. And like, wait, oh, it's the inverse of a mixed media project. They start with the manga first and then the anime comes out. Okay, I see what you're planning.
So is Nishida like the overall creator for the series then?
Yeah. I think this CG person for Tiger and Bunny. I think that's the whole bit for this, for Tesla, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, the anime, it's unfortunate. I saw the preview of the manga. It looked pretty decent. The anime does not.
I've seen people calling it the second coming of X-Arm, which is slightly too degrading. But yeah, if you want the version of it that doesn't look like ass, we still can't vouch for the story, but it's certainly going to look better. That's starting October 19th. Also starting October 19th is Doing His Best to Confess by Satoru. And then their last new digital title for the month is Even Given the Worthless Appraiser Class, I'm Actually the Strongest by Ibarakino. They're doing the story. Morohoshi Fuji is doing the art. And Yu Hitake is doing the character design. And again, that'll be on October 26th. Listen, I remember there was a gag in Soma Spider So What, where she's like, I should definitely get the appraiser skill. That'll definitely help me out. And then at level 1, it's like, you're in a cave. That's a rock. But then once he gets into like level 10, it's like actually telling her useful stuff. So I don't know. I don't buy any of these titles where they're like, I started out weak. Ooh. It's like, no, you didn't. This is a power fantasy. I know how this shit goes.
They were weak, but then they realized, oh, wait, I am strong. I just have to be told by somebody. Usually a girl.
And then we've got a couple of other assorted licenses. Glacier Bay Books licensed Umi Kusahara's Mother's 100 Views of Reality, the collected short stories of Kijitori Byu. And let's see, 11 Arts is going to be distributing, I think this is a French word, so I'm not quite sure how to say it, Popoli of Chimney Town, the anime film. They're going to be putting out an English dub for it. It's going to debut at LA's Animation is Film on October 23rd, so we'll see if it gets any wider runs after that. And then Crunchyroll manga exists? Question mark. Justin, you seem to know more about this than me.
I am surprised you missed this one. Yeah, so this...
I've actually been focusing on work, you know, instead of checking Twitter every 5 minutes.
Wait, first of all, you don't have to spend all your time on Twitter. Just throw it out there. You don't have to do that.
I mean, there's nothing else to do on my phone.
Just throw it out there. Play any mobile game.
Okay, so my work's Wi-Fi blocks stuff like that. Even when I try to do Genshin Impact on my lunch break, I can't do it. I'm kind of salty.
And let you do Twitter. Anyways, so yeah, this is Restaurant to Know the World. Obviously, the anime, I guess I would say kind of a revival, because it was something that it's been a while since it had run, but not have a new season. At some point, they did a new manga edition for this, because they had a first manga version that Yen Press and Crunchyroll originally had, but that ended. But now we have Kadokawa releasing a new edition of Restaurant to Know the World that's you can find on certain digital outlets by chapters, but yeah, you can just read it up on Crunchyroll. So in general, yes, Crunchyroll manga exists, and it's not actually surprising Crunchyroll manga has it, because they already had the first one, so in reality, it's not surprising.
I could have sworn that Seven Seas had this one.
They had the novels.
Gotcha, that's it. Since I know there's also another series that's almost identical in premise, and I couldn't remember if that's what Seven Seas actually had or what. Let's see. You know, I think we might have done part of this one before. Moving on to streaming news. High Dive is adding...
Whoa. We can't leave Futsukiya out of the licensing business, can we? We can't do that.
Why did you skip over them in the first place?
I was going to get to them.
Okay, get to them then.
But we're going to get to them quickly because we got to get to other stuff. So yeah, as usual, they licensed a lot of stuff. 13 Boys Love titles. It looks like the big one was Kenamono Arashi, because they got the original, then Hug Me Baby and Kiss Me Baby, all that. So they're going to be on the service at some point. And then they got two Dento Hayani titles, Ashita Okokita Kimiwa and Koko Kawa off Record Day. Someday they will license stuff and then also provide English names for them one day. Until then, we'll just be like that. But yeah, more licenses for the Boys Love service. Now go ahead.
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, so I think like two podcasts ago, we mentioned that Sentai was picking up some more anime that had been like on Netflix or Amazon Prime beforehand. And so they announced at that time that they're going to be streaming the third season of Yuki Yuna as a Hero. And so now they've also picked up streaming for the first and second seasons, as well as the shorts, which is good, since apparently the second season was streaming absolutely nowhere, and that one never got a physical release over here. So I saw a couple of folks saying, I tried to check out the second season again before this new season started 4 years later, and I can't find it. And then Funimation's actually added Log Horizon Season 2 to their catalog. They picked up Season 1 recently, and they were the ones who streamed Season 3. So now it seems like they have all three seasons. Guess Sentai just let that one go, so. Actually, do I even have it, the first two on DVD yet? I might still need to buy this from the Sentai sales.
Uh-oh.
Eh.
Assuming they still have it in stock.
Eh, it'll be fine. You know how much stuff they print.
Well, I mean, at some point they're going to lose the license to that, so.
Yeah, well, unless the license has a clause, you know, saying you have to destroy all old copies, they can just, you know, continue to do fire sales with them. Unless that is what a fire sale is. What I mean is that they can just put them in that corner of the Right Stuff storehouse that they apparently rent out. Because every time you buy stuff from the Sentai store, it just ships out from the Right Stuff
storehouse. No, just make it saying, like, at some point they're going to run out. And then Funimation will be putting it out, so.
I mean, they're still selling copies of, like, that collector's edition of Nozaki-kun, which came out, like, 6 years ago.
They have the rights to that, though.
But they're not. They haven't made any more of that collector's edition, I assure you.
No, I'm just saying, like, they don't have the rights. Sentai doesn't have the rights to Love Horizon anymore, so.
Well, even if they don't have the rights to make more, they might still be allowed to sell off whatever stock they have.
Yeah, and all
I'm saying I think they have a lot of stocks. They seem to always overprint everything they make.
All right. We'll
I mean, check how they do, like, gigantic sales.
Make sure you get it before then. Make sure you get it before it ends. Make sure.
I mean, if not, Funimation will put it out someday, so.
Just wait.
Because Funimation's even going to the effort of dubbing Season 3, I think with the same cast, as much as they can manage, they seem invested in putting it all out. Because who's going to buy Season 3 if you can't buy Seasons 1 and 2? Nobody, and that's why Nodama Kantabel never got licensed over here. Anyway, so, Retro Crush, as mentioned, Helen's number 3 enemy at the moment. They're adding a couple new things. We already mentioned the Dirty Pair TV series. They're also bringing over Canary on October 1st, Magic Users Club and the OVA on October 8th, Yakuta Japan on the 15th, Lagrange, The Flower of Rene on October 22nd, which is a show I have not thought about in years, and Nightwalker, The Midnight Detective on October 29th.
First of all, I'm definitely curious about who your other two enemies are, but at the same time, also not sure I want to know.
Okay, apparently there's some idiot at my
workplace. No, I don't need to know. I don't need to know. But then second of all, yeah, I can't remember last time I thought about Rene in, like, ages.
Occasionally I'll think of it and be like, yeah, they didn't do as much of that story as they could have. Pity.
Yeah, the character design, I guess, was nice. I can't remember anything about it, aside from that. And did that get, like, multiple seasons, too? Didn't that get, like, multiple seasons, or is that, like, a...
I'm not sure if you'd call it two seasons, or if you would have called it a split core. I don't remember what the spacing is like.
Yeah, But, yeah, I haven't... Yeah, Viz had that title, and I was like, I guess they don't have it anymore. Whoops. Anyways.
Now on to our fall thoughts. And since I last looked at this section, Justin has put in bolds, italics, and underlines, and I don't know what any of this means. So Justin, take it away. Explain to me your editorial notes.
Once again, as usual, I have my science of editing or listing my fall shows. But actually, this one's a little different somehow because... I don't actually have a best of order yet or a worst just yet, which is weird. I usually have, like, something that I'm like, that's it. This is automatically bad. At best, I just have something that's average, but I'm interested in seeing, like, more episodes.
Yeah, I just have to ask, are the bolds supposed to be the titles that we both watched?
Yes.
Because
you
missed a few on yours. Let me just change that while you're talking.
Where? If you say, oh, I see Taish. Oh, oops. Anyways. So I have that. And I have something later on that I'm planning on watching But I just haven't gotten to it yet. And then there's one title I'm not even sure I want to watch, but I may have to. And I'll explain why.
Yes,
later.
That's one where I want to watch other people watch it.
And then there's some that haven't aired yet. So, all right, let's get to it. I'm going to try to get to my first section quick. These are all stuff that, or except for one, that's already aired before, but they're airing again now this season. So, obviously, we're going to start with Yashahime, season 2. Everybody's favorite Inuyasha story, right? This is everybody's favorite, right? this started like in the fall of last year. Went on to like I think the spring, and then it stopped. Now it's back, and it's still as silly as ever with how they do the script.
Good silly or bad silly?
Enjoyable silly. I can't imagine anybody else can tolerate any of the writing for this series because it's not great. But I just really enjoy just being back in the Inuyasha world for some reason. And while they haven't, the only obvious issue is Sesshomaru is still kind of a jerk and still just mysterious for whatever reason that probably involves Rin. And it's just really dumb. And obviously the main cast, especially Inuyasha and Kagome, haven't really appeared too much. But I'm obviously looking forward to them showing at some point this season. So yeah, I'm probably still here. I'm still... I guess ironically, or well, not ironically, there are still enjoyments to be had. I guess I'm never bored when I watch Yashahime. Maybe frustrated, but never bored. Mushoku Tensei Part 2. This was one series that I was pretty sure I was going to drop at the like episode either 7 or 8 because it was just too much talking, and that's not even getting to the actual main character. So. When that twist happened in episode 8, I said, okay, fine. I guess I need to see where this is going to go. Because it basically changed everything for that series for me. So I'm at least curious to see where it's going to end for part 2. Then you got 86, part 2. This was the... So what Mushoku Tensei was the winter... Was a show that aired in the winter. This is also the time that got delayed from summer to fall. Now you got 86, part 2. This was the spring season show. But now it's back for the fall. The direction feels like it's even sharper than the first season somehow. And supposedly the light novel readers did not like this version. So I'm very curious to see their thoughts. Well, I guess I saw a couple thoughts about the light novel version and how the anime staff's adapting it. And I think they're liking it. But yeah, you could definitely see that the staff knows what the heck they're doing. So it's been pretty fun so far. Let's Make a Mug season 2, another spring show that's now returned for the fall. Again, shorts. Short series. Actually, it's a return to shorts for me. I had no shorts for the summer anime season, and now I have 2 shorts for this season. But yeah, more clay making, more of the girls making pottery and stuff like that. And we still got the live action segments, and I'm still not sure how or why they're continuing to do this. But it is entertaining to see the voice actresses attempt to do work. It is something else to see. And then the other short is Ganbare Doki-chan, which is basically horny office anime. But it's 5 minutes. Although really, it says it's a 5-minute show, but it's like really 3 minutes because like the rest is like with the opening or the ending song. And that ending song is really long. It's like, wait, you got 3 minutes of actual animation of this girl just thinking that she's gonna get boned, and then you got this 1 minute and 30 seconds of this, of the opening or ending. Come on, what are we doing here? But it gives me the shorts, the short anime are back, Helen. They're back in style.
Well, I don't think I watched any short series, but I believe you. I can believe you that they're back in style.
And I would talk about the other 2 shows, but I'm already tired. So go ahead, relieve me for a bit.
Well, I see that one of the shows you haven't tried yet is Heike Story, which I tried and I caught up to it, which is 4 episodes now as of the time of this recording. And yeah, I'm really jiving with it. It's definitely one of those shows where I know I'm going to be slightly confused about who most of the characters are, since it's a big cast and a lot of the folks are just dressed similarly. It's fairly realistic, which means that the faces all look kind of the same. Or at least that's realistic. That's how I feel in real life anyway. But it's an interesting story based off of the oral tradition, later compiled into a book, of the same name. about the rise and fall of several different families in Japan around a bit after the year 1000, so a bit after, like, Tales of Genji. Definitely looks really fun. This is Naoko Yamada, previously of KyoAni, directing at Science-Saru. So Science-Saru is under a lot of strain right now, but their shows continue to look really good, which makes me feel very conflicted. But I'm really enjoying this so far. And just, yeah, Justin, you should make time to try this one out, definitely. Not everything on your list you should make time to try out, but this one you definitely should.
I guess we're going to fight maybe later. I don't know.
I mean, we'll another one out. You have on there is Miroko-chan, which I also tried out. And I just didn't really like the first episode. I had heard that even though the premise could go either as a comedy or a horror, since it's an, you know, normal high school girl, but she can see really horrible ghosts all around her and she's trying to ignore them and go on her life, I had heard that this one trends more towards horror than comedy. And yeah, I just didn't find the horror that interesting. Like, she's trying to text a friend without letting a ghost know she can see it. She's lying in bed and feels something, and so she looks under her covers and there's a ghost, like, crying, like, mommy, just crawling around on her stomach. You know, that's not my kind of entertainment. I'm sure it's some people's, but it's not mine.
No, you gotta stick around till it actually gets to, like, story stuff.
Well, I'm told that it just gets kind of more and more horrific in the sense of leaning into horror and stuff, and that's also not
my thing. Well, if you're not big into horror, then never mind.
Yeah. I'm okay with, like, supernatural and spooky, but not horror. So I actually did watch, I started off The Night Beyond the Tri-Cornered Window, and I got through, like, half an episode, and I was like, nah, this is boring. The premise of that one is that you've got, like, a guy who can hunt ghosts, and you've got another guy who can see ghosts. And so guy number one pressures guy number two into becoming his assistant so he can, like, use his energy to punch ghosts. And the way he does this is by, like, connecting with the guy's soul, and it kind of gives him, like, a spiritual orgasm. And it's just, A, very rushed. It explains, like, that whole concept in, like, under 5 minutes. And B, it's just very lackluster visually. You know, it's like, are you sure that's an orgasm? It doesn't look particularly fun.
look, they got it. They got to try to get away with it on broadcast TV, Helen.
I mean that's definitely not even what they were doing. So, like,
okay, no, it was, God, I'll just throw it out there.
I know that the manga is licensed in the U.S. So I'm kind of curious if this is a case where it's a bad adaptation. You know, if it's rushed or if even the manga is just sort of meh. So I guess if you're really, really desperate for gay shit, you could try this out. But if you're like me and not too desperate for gay shit, this one isn't worth your time. It's just boring. Go read the fanfic based off of this. I assure you it will be more entertaining. I've not seen any of the fanfic, but I feel confident saying this.
All right. Before I actually talk about other new fall stuff, I will get to old stuff. Starting with everybody's favorite. Well, at least in Japan, it's just their favorite.
I was gonna say, you already said everybody's favorite Yashahime.
Yeah, I can't really go back to that well anymore. But yeah, obviously Demon Slayer is being milked to death, and it'll be milked to death till they finally end or get to the end, because obviously the manga's over. So it's like, okay, just gotta adapt some stuff. But before we get there, UFO Table, Shonen Jump, Aniplex, all the big players are gonna be like, okay, we're gonna make as much Demon Slayer as humanly possible, because we think lots of people love this series. Yes, lots of people do love this series, and I guess I kind of do. So yeah, I watched the Rengoku specific episode. This is basically to lead up to Mugen Train. Brand new, basically got Rengoku. We get to find out why he brought all those bento boxes on the train. It's kind of funny. It was actually a really funny episode. And then once again, you can see UFO Table just show off their mastery of animation. Already curious how they're gonna do entertainment arc, which unfortunately we have to all wait until December, but it is what it is. Just be entertained by the Mugen Train arc once again. So you're watching that, and I'm also watching season 2 of Restaurant to Another World, which is once again fantasy creatures stumble onto a Western restaurant and enjoy the food. This is being done by a different studio. So they're really just kind of building the series back up again. So it's very interesting to see what's happening for Restaurant to Another World. Very interesting, that's for sure. Definitely keeping up with this and wondering if they're going to tie in some more classic stuff. And yeah, that is the last episode I watched. Basically had a spin on Romeo and Juliet going to a fantasy world, getting isekai into the Western restaurant. It was kind of fun.
All right, so let's see. What else did I watch? Oh, I watched Digimon Ghost Game, the first episode anyway. Haven't had time to watch the second. And that was honestly one of the better premieres I saw this season. It was exactly what I expected looking for the trailers. It was kind of like Denno Coil meets Digimon, which is an idea that really works, since Denno Coil's whole idea was this idea that even the cyber world can become sort of abandoned, neglected, haunted. And as somebody who has lived through multiple stages of the internet by this point, that definitely rings true. So yeah, the first episode was pretty fun. I will laugh my ass off if I end up continuing this and it ends up being my first Digimon series. But then again, I also started Gundam with Gundam Build Fighters and look where I am now. So, yeah, that one was a perfectly fun children's show. And also definitely better than half the stuff I saw on my list.
Woo!
But this is not even a take, Justin.
If you say so, as you already know, I'm kind of scarred over the last Digimon that I'd seen.
Yeah.
And I know this is obviously different. And I've had for some praise for Ghost Game. But again, I was really that interested in Digimon in general, like even past iterations. And now I have to think, do I even want to commit myself to another Digimon, which is obviously going to go more than just this season? I might have to wait for that one.
That is perfectly understandable best. After going through, like, what, almost 2 years with the latest version because of COVID delays?
Yeah, so that's a wait and see for me at best. Finally, some new, actually, like, new blood. Finally, got to talk about that. And the first one is, I guess, objectively the worst. But again, I don't really have a worst yet, honestly. Everything except for the top, I guess, two on my list. I would say I'm continuing, or at least I'm going to at least give a couple more episodes. So my senpai is annoying.
Oh, so it's annoying. It's the worst, but it's also just annoying.
Also just annoying. I actually read the manga of this, and I thought it was just okay, but nothing about it said, okay, I want to jump back into it immediately. And it's much easier for me to go check out the anime, because it'll be airing to week, but it's going to have to give me more than what it gave me this first episode for me to continue, I guess, after episode 3, because it's, again, some stuff from the anime, from the manga made it in, but it's just basically an adult romance comedy mix, but the size very much is an issue. That's basically the theme. Futaba is very conscious of that, and then one of her coworkers just seems to dote on her, but not in the romantic sense. So it's gonna have that that contrast. But
I know there's also like the works. Height contrast, and
yeah, the height
you're
contrast.
Over 6 foot,
yeah,
right?
I am 5'11".
Okay, so you're close to 6 feet. So you might not understand, but if you are like my height, which is like 5'2", then yeah, you kind of live life knowing that some people will try to just randomly pick you up, and there's not much you can do about it except knee them in the balls. So that also, like, from the images I've seen, that is also part of the dynamic that seems to be going on here.
Yeah, it doesn't seem as funny as it should be.
It's not funny in real life.
I had this criticism with the manga. Looks great because it's all in full color. That's nice, but some of the jokes just didn't really take off. And it could, again, I feel like comedy generally gets stronger the more it goes on, because you get more settled in with the characters and what they do. But then at the same time, it could also get more boring at the same time. So I'm basically going to give this a couple of episodes to see if it actually get a little better. It's just solid, and it's nothing spectacular. I've just got to see if it actually improves enough to where I want to actually watch it throughout the rest of the season or rest of this year.
Yeah, talking about comedies that aren't quite working, I tried out the first episode of The Vampire Dies in No Time, and it was just a little too manic for me. I feel like this is definitely one of those shows where if it was like a half episode long, it might work better. Since it's already two halves to an episode, we've got the first half where the characters meet each other, and then the second half where they start doing what I'm assuming will be the shtick of the whole thing, which is our vampire hunter and our vampire are now both kind of called out to deal with a vampire-related issue, which I feel like I'm going to make everything sound funnier than it was just by describing it. Like, the second half of the episode involves a guy who's like, oh, I'm going to get turned into a vampire and that'll make me so cool. And everyone's trying to tell him, no, it's really not cool. Like, you can't go outside. Like, you have to drink blood. You're not even going to become a true vampire. And just trying to talk somebody down from becoming a vampire and, like, as if it was, like, somebody who just needed to get a rabies shot. And it was just a little too manic for me. I might be more inclined towards it if I watched it another time, if I'm just more in the mood for it. Because I remember I also didn't like The Demon Girl Next Door when I first tried it, and that one's also really high energy. But I liked that one more when I gave it, like, a second shot later on. So I don't know. This one wasn't offensive, but it was just a lot at once. Oh, but the Armadillo, John the Armadillo, is definitely the best character in the show so far, and apparently a reference to, like, the really early Dracula film, which is pretty funny. Apparently, in a move that has baffled people for ever since that movie came out, it featured armadillos on screen. Everyone's like, why? And this series has decided, yes, let's embrace that why and just have John the Armadillo as a character.
That's funny. That's funny. Helen, the nature of making podcast scripts is you just realize, oh yeah, you've got to put something in here. Guess what? I forgot to put one anime in this list.
Was it The Vampire Dies in No Time?
That was The Faraway Paladin, which I finally gave the first episode a try earlier today.
I have not tried it just because I have read the light novel and gone, I like this, but everything I like about it will not transfer over to the anime version.
It's interesting. It was always that, yeah, I know, I saw some concern about this going in from light novel, people read the light novel.
By which you mean you edited my review of it, where I have an entire paragraph on this?
No. I've seen some other people. This somebody made a joke on Twitter with this tweet. It was either last month or something like that. There was a tweet going around about how you have the granddaddy of light novels. I think you have Mushoku Tensei, you have ReZero, and then you have the goofy looking dragon with the Faraway Paladin, because they saw trailers and it didn't look quite good. So they're very concerned about how it was going to translate. But coming in from my perspective, I mean, it looks pretty solid. I mean, look, I'm not the visual part, for the most part, I'm not that good at telling. But for an episode, it was fine to me. And then just in general, the story was pretty simple enough. Person died. He's been reincarnated. He's now going through growth, but with three undead people. And they're all very interesting characters. It's obviously setting stuff up. So I can't really say, like, it's really, like, saying, hey, what's the goal here and stuff like that. Doesn't really even explain, like, why is it called the Faraway Paladin? What's the point of that?
To be fair, I'm not sure about that either, and I've read the first volume.
Well,
I've got an idea on the Paladin part, but the Faraway part, I'm still guessing.
Far away from another world.
Yeah, that is the guess. Actually,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if that is it, but hey, there you go. But yeah, it's solid. I'm looking forward to seeing how it improves from here, so I'm looking forward to watching more episodes of it.
Yeah, I've definitely seen a few people kvetching online saying, oh yeah, this is the latest title the people said is going to be the really good light novel isekai, and look, it's not so great. And it's like, well, if you guys had read my review, you would see me saying this is good, but it might not make such a great anime, since, I mean, the art style in both the manga and the anime just looks so generic to me. And the light novel's illustrations are anything but generic. They had a real style to them. So it's definitely kind of a letdown to see them go by an almost paint-by-numbers approach visually for these iterations. Not that I would have expected them to look like the light novel illustrations, since that's a style that would be really hard to animate. But yeah, I'm just now hoping that J-Novel Club makes that series one of their catch-ups, like, next month, since I'm just not that interested in watching the anime at this point, you know? I'd rather just read the light novels. And then, let's see. I think we are starting to get to the point in the script where we're going to talk about stuff we've both watched. So, let's go for one.
Get the fight. Let's go. Let's fight. Let's go.
Let's go for one that we both watched right before this podcast started. Rumble Garandal, which I made the joke on Twitter. It's always dangerous to watch something new before no one else has talked about it yet. But that means I can be the first person saying that this feels a bit like Akudama Drive mixed of anime guitarists, but it's taking itself seriously 100%, and its seriousness is to be very campy and cringy. Like, it is very serious about being camp and cringe. It was one of those ones where I was like, I'm so glad that I can withstand more amounts of secondhand embarrassment than I could as a younger person, because that was definitely what they were distinctly going for there. Just, I don't know, I feel like this is one of the series where I definitely need to get another episode or two to know if I'm going to, like, enjoy it or not.
Oh no, I'm already in.
Okay. Look, okay.
As you already know, I have a big weakness for anything otaku references or any allusions to that. And basically, you know that guy that showed that kind of looked like Kamina?
Yes, I did see that.
I said, okay, I guess I'm going to have to commit to this series for at least a good couple episodes. I don't know, just really stupid. But
so if they kill that guy off in the second episode, you're just going to be out?
I'm pretty sure they're going to have a new reference to make up for it. and then this is silly. I guess the robots are powered by passion.
Yes.
Like, all the hackneyed cliches you get from, like, most stories, that's how the robot gets its energy from.
Although, when you say it out loud, that reminds me that I can think of, like, at least three mecha shows where the mechs are powered by, like, Eros or libido or something. So this is actually...
Are we bringing back... Aquarian Evo back?
I was thinking that. I was thinking Star Driver, Darling in the Franxx, you know... Don't think that's how they worked in Valvrave, but you know I could be forgetting something there. But yeah, it's funny. I think there are multiple shows this season where it's like another version of Japan invaded from a parallel world. Because there's this one, and I think that was also the case in one of the other mecha shows this season. But I can't remember since there were a lot of mecha shows this season.
You got like Move Love, you got like AIM, you got so many. There's a new show that got announced like... Literally, like, maybe a month or, like, a week into the
There's,
season.
Like, Mushi or something, Mushibo, which sounds interesting, but that one's not streaming. There's that Aimin.
Megaton Mushi.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm thinking of. Then there's the Aimin one, where I saw people being like, okay, ghosts, folks, this is not dog whistling. This is, like, high-pitched screaming about Japanese nationalism. So I was like, okay, that's a hard not watch.
You have to wait for that one, I think.
That one is out. That one's on Funimation.
No, I mean, like... First episode, you have to see more episodes and see what other people say about it that are interesting continually.
I don't know. It seemed to be we let immigrants in and now they are somehow taking over Japan, which is like high-pitched racist screaming. So yeah, I kind of feel like I might need to keep watching this one just so I have one mecha show under my belt this season.
Yeah, this is probably going to be one I keep for a while. I watched it. It was just so silly. Mm-hmm. But I had so much fun with it.
It also reminds me of, you know, whenever the characters in a show decide to make a fake anime, like, you know, like the characters in Genshiken or Shirobako, and they always come up with, like, the most wild, hackneyed premise. This feels like the show one of them would have come up with. Like, the Anime Club and Anime Guitarist would have come up with this when they were, like, trying to make a doujinshi for Kamiket or something. For all I know, they did, because that show did a lot of things.
Here's a show that's trying to do too many things at once, and look, you just need to focus on the hockey part. Just do that. Puri Ore, just do that.
I have not watched this yet, but certain folks are trying to convince me to do it, to go on Taiku Podcast with it, and I am refusing.
No. You have to join in just to find out if I actually do hockey.
Listen, I will wait for other people to tell me if this one's actually good or not.
Well, I don't know if it's good. It's just that this first episode made too many mistakes.
From what I saw, the first episode has the girls go from being in an embroidery club to being on a hockey team to doing idol performances after they win their hockey game.
Well, no. What they did was they started out with something that I assume happens later in the series.
But later in the series, they do a victory dance, which is an idol performance.
I'm not even sure if it's timed properly, but I see what you're talking about. What's funny is that there is a part where the coach starts talking about mixing hockey entertainment, and I'm like, well, what do you know? The Carolina Hurricanes did something like this almost similarly. Obviously, not the idol singing and stuff like that, but they tried to do like the.
Wait, what did they do?
No, the Hurricanes, the past couple of seasons, they've been trying to like engage the fans or do something different than usual hockey stuff. So after the games, they were like, do some silly stuff. They were like, bring over some celebrities. There was this one time that they brought Evander Holyfield to box on the ice. You have to look it up. They've done some silly stuff.
And this does, in fact, sound entertaining.
Yeah, so I get that. So from my perspective, since I've been watching hockey, some of the stuff they've been doing is actually okay. It's just the fact that how they set up for the hockey was very awkward. Like you mentioned, they were an embroidery club, And then all of a sudden, the main character, or one of the main characters, just said, hey, we should try this hockey club. But there's no reason why. And I'm like, wait, you're just going just to go? Somebody stop them. And then nobody actually stops them. So yeah, it was kind of awkward in places, but I feel like there's something in there. It's the fact that they have to figure out, the show has to figure out what it wants to do. Is it going to be, every episode is going to have them singing? How much more of the hockey are they going to get into? The physical tolls? Are they actually going to be fights? Because you know hockey has fights.
But apparently you can't check in girls' hockey, so.
Yeah. They explained that too. They explained that in this episode. So there probably won't be any fights. But it'd be interesting how much hockey they actually integrate into something that, I mean, hell, we don't get hockey anime. That alone is the appeal for me watching this.
I mean, you're talking to somebody who's a big fan of the webcomic Check Please, which is not just homoerotic, it's straight up gay with hockey and checking and lots of pie baking. It's very good. You should try it out if you haven't.
Put that on my large list of stuff to have to read.
Okay, I can accept that.
It has to find more of its identity. But, I mean, lucky them, because it even mentions, it even breathes the word hockey, it's going to keep me my attention unless it gets boring.
It will keep my attention unless it gets boring. You know, that's a very self-fulfilling statement.
I'm going to try my best. But at least, like I say, the first episode didn't bore me. I can at least say that. It was just very awkward, unfortunately.
Let's see. Speaking of awkward, we have the awkwardly named Tocked Opi Destiny, which is, I looked it up later. This one's based off a mobile game, which explains a lot.
Yeah, that actually was one reason I wasn't going to watch it. But then I saw enough praise about it, so I said, okay, I'll watch it.
It looks kind of good, but it's one of those ones where I was thinking during it, okay, these folks need to understand, if you're going to drop us in the middle of everything, you know, in media res to start the story, it has to be an interesting in the middle of everything. Something interesting actually has to be happening, because they tried to do that when it's not very interesting, and then they spend a whole lot of time explaining, okay, so we've got these monsters, we've got these people who fight these monsters, yada yada yada, and it was just so awkward. Like, I might give it another episode or two, or I might just straight up forget about it before I get to the next episode.
I personally liked it because of the visuals, and when they actually did do some action, that was kind of enjoyable. But I guess you're saying with the story, it's when you drop something, and you gotta connect with something. I'm not sure. These two characters don't really seem to enjoy each other's presence at this moment.
And it's funny because they explain things like, oh yeah, this is how we fight monsters. And then they fight monsters, and it's like, wait, but you're doing this other thing too. Like, this guy keeps losing his arm to power her up? Maybe? Like, what's going on there?
No, he's conducting. He's obviously the conductor, the whole music thing. There you go.
Yeah, but he doesn't even go along with her for one fight. And so it's like, does he have to be there?
He's too weak. Well, we already established that he's not really up to speed. Like after he finished with the first battle, he falls right on the ground.
I mean, understandable. But then it's like, does he need to be there? Since if he needs to be there, why did the girl run off on the second fight without taking him along? Wouldn't she have automatically lost in that case? It's just, there's some what feel like inconsistencies, and they might be inconsistencies. They might just be not explaining the story well enough. But either way, it's, yeah, it's got flashy visuals going forward, but I think that's about it.
That's enough for me for now. I don't mind. For a first episode, it just has to do enough to not get me to drop it immediately. It just has to do enough. If you want to explain yourself later, it's perfectly fine. It's just that you do have to explain yourself later. So we'll see where it goes for this one with this awkward. It is an awkward name. Tak Opi Destiny. It has to assume this. It has to do something with music.
Yeah, I've seen OP written before in reference to like names of musical scores, but I do not know music, so I don't know anything beyond that. This series is also made more awkward for me because I watched Sakugan right after it, and that one had a very good in media res starting point. Like, it just had really natural world building. The setting definitely reminds me a bit of Maid in the Abyss, like everyone, because one of our main characters is a precocious elementary school-aged blonde girl, and they are in an underground labyrinth, and she really wants to explore the labyrinth, and everyone is like, it's real dangerous out there, no. So obviously there are some Maid in Abyss, like, not illusions, but you know, some similarities there. But the story definitely seems to be going in a different direction. For one, the people in this series just have really weird names. I'm not even gonna try to say them. The girl is not with, you know, like, another companion her own age. Her companion this series is her actual dad. So he's like, I don't know, the older I get, the older I want to like make anime parents, you know? So I guess he's like late 30s, early 40s or something, you know, kind of slovenly. He likes his daughter, but he wants to protect her from the outside world. You know, the two of them go to work together in a like construction mech, yada, yada, yada. And it's just got really nice world building. You definitely have to like the characters. They've got kind of a feisty dynamic to them. You know, lots of fighting with the girl. You know, she's constantly trying to, like, sneak out and run away so she can explore the labyrinth, and he keeps catching up to her. And this usually ends with both of them getting caught in booby traps on the way out. Crunchyroll also did a live stream where they had the producer and the girl's voice actor chatting as they showed the first two episodes. So I've seen the second episode as well, which was nice. I feel like this is one of those where if you can watch the first three episodes at once, it'll probably work really nicely. Since the second episode just kind of follows up from the first one, you know, kind of establishing the story, you know, here's where we're going to go next. And then, you know, the real adventure begins in episode three. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Obviously, I've only watched the first episode, so I can't really say what's happened in the future. But I did like what I watched.
Also, episode one has an amazing gut punch in there. That was just rude.
Yes.
I just like actually exclaimed at my TV. That was rude.
Yeah, that was well-timed, but also rude. And yeah, that and just the fact that they really built that particular character up and then, or those characters up, and then just really, it goes out like that gut punch. That actually got to me. And that also was what kind of sold me on the series in general. Or this episode, because
the show just punches you in the face and you go, yeah, I'm sold.
Yeah, because at the start, honestly, the humor is kind of, at the start, seemed kind of weird. It's like, wait, is it going to go a mix of kind of serious, but then comedy? And it seems like it's going to lean toward more comedy. But then you obviously get the more action bits, and then that gut punch at the end. Oh, man.
I've also seen some people making comparisons to, like, Gurren Lagann with the whole, you know, everybody's outside, everybody's underground, you know, drills sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. But
it's
yeah,
this one where it's like, I'm not sure that they know there's an outside world. It might be like a City of Ember situation right there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Sakugan was, aside from my little quibbles, it was actually one of my favorite premieres so far that I watched this season. I mean, I just enjoy, I also like how it looks too. And then some of the comic bits did work. And then these names are just like, wow.
It's like Grogombar and Nemenpu. It's like,
they've made up, I'm confident they may have like 10 different names throughout the episode. The daughter was just great. She was just great, personally. Just great. And then also, do you send a 9-year-old to college? What kind of colleges actually exist in this world?
Yeah, I'm more curious about what kinds of colleges exist, since we see, like, some shots of, like, this underground colony they live in, and it's kind of hard to tell, like, how big it actually is. There's a couple of shots in the second episode which makes me think that everything we saw in the first episode was only a part of the colony, kind of like, you know, the more working class, rough and tumble area, and that there might be a more prosperous area which has, like, a university and everything. But yeah, it's like, we've got, like, a little precocious 9-year-old genius over here, but she's also very much a 9-year-old. In a good way. In the way that's like, does not always listen to reason, yada yada yada.
Yeah. And then how her character kind of changes towards the end. And then how that also, and also the father kind of was really interesting too. Even despite his overprotectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Really good dynamic, I think.
Yeah, and there's a couple of really interesting little world building details in there. Like, I didn't notice it until the producer and the actors pointed it out. But all the characters apparently have like ID numbers written on the backs of their necks and stuff like that, and like chips to be scanned. So there's definitely some more dystopian vibes going on there, which I mean, we should assume because, you know, it's a series set in an underground labyrinth. That is just always like a setting for dystopian fiction. But yeah, definitely interested to see where it'll go, and I hope it goes somewhere good in whatever its runtime is. I'm assuming it's one core, but I don't know for sure.
I think the one I'm still mystified about is Irina, the vampire cosmonaut.
It gave me real strong The Princess and the Pilot vibes, and I'm not sure if it's a good thing or not.
It's definitely setting stuff up. I mean, and I think some stuff are, like, the actual ideas are kind of cool. Send a dog to space. No, don't kill the dog. Don't do that.
Justin, I have some news for you about real history.
It's just heartbreaking. And then they actually describe what they actually did to the dog. That upset me.
Yeah, well, I've got some bad news for you, Justin, involving real history.
Yeah, you don't have to actually tell me the real history. Don't do it. But then, obviously, the plan is to send not just any human to space. In fact, one of the humans he was planning, he wanted to go to space, but unfortunately, he did something bad. So he's definitely barred from going to space. Instead, he's got to teach somebody to go to space. And that probably he's got to teach or train is a vampire.
Which they are classifying as like, it seems like in series they're kind of more like a race, just like you would have Caucasian, but people also treat her as if she's not human. So like, oh, it doesn't count if she's the first one to go to space. She won't actually be the first human then.
Yeah, and they don't even, they were even emphasizing that you should only call her N-44. It's like, ooh, oh no. But I'm not sure where this is all going to go just yet. I feel like, something I guess has got to drop with these two characters. Because obviously, they're going to know each other more, and they're going to be together a lot more often. But there's got to be something more. I feel like something is a little lacking. I can't really describe it because it's just the first episode, and they're definitely setting stuff up. But I can go either way with this. I'm just going to have to see where it goes from here.
Let's see. That's almost everything. I saw Taisho Otome Fairy Tale before we did the podcast. Just before. And, I do like Taisho, period. Like, visuals, costumes, etc. I'll have to give this show another episode or two to see if I'll continue with it. It feels just very much like a normal shoujo series, which isn't something we get a lot of anime adaptations for. So I'm just not quite sure where it's going to go. We've got a guy who's been badly injured in an accident and exiled from the family home because of this, because jackass family. And so he's had a bride, quote unquote, sent to him. So it's like a young girl who's, I think she's like 14. We know she's under 15. And so she's going to be living there, you know, helping him out, yada, yada, yada. So it's definitely a cute romantic setup, but might be too boring for me. Not sure. Just really need more episodes to tell for this one.
Yeah, it's pretty much fluff for the first episode. aside from the backstory for our main character, the main guy. It's pretty much, oh yeah, here's the girl gonna do almost everything for the guy. And obviously the guy's disabled, so you get why. But then you obviously have the thing where
it's so funny though, because everyone's like, oh, he's lost the use of his dominant hand. Oh no. And it's like, we can see him getting around pretty easily with his left hand. Like, he could, it's difficult, but he could certainly learn to, like, write and everything, etc. with his left hand. Like, it's definitely a life-changing disability for him, but it's definitely also one he can, you know, adapt and live a very full life with. So it's kind of strange to see jackass his family is.
Well, it's more like, it's less, well, no, that only added, because for some reason, they even liked him before he had the accident. And then obviously, the fact that they lost their mother was also another factor too, so it just built up. That's what I understood it as. Like, they already didn't like him at first, and now they don't like him even more. But yeah, I am curious to see where it's going to go. It's just that the connotations around it are a little unfortunate. but we'll see how that goes. I am curious to see what changes between these two. And hopefully, as you said, this could potentially get boring if it's going to stay kind of like this, so we'll have to see on that. I think the other, let's see, I think, yep, just one more show for me that I was able to watch. That'd be Blue Period, which, a Netflix show that's actually, well, I mean, it's not really simulcast, but there's actually, like, not that far away. Helen, they kind of did it.
It's only a week behind. It's only taken them years to realize what everyone else has been doing since, like, 2012.
I actually think they're 2 weeks behind. But yes, it's still not great. But I mean, it's so much better. So yeah, I'm obviously game for that. And then obviously, I've read the manga. The manga's pretty good. First episode for this was pretty solid too. Got more into where we see Yatora's character, delinquent, hangs out with his friends. Also kind of delinquents, but they're kind of wholesome delinquents at the same time. They're a very interesting cast of characters. And obviously, Yatori gets really into art. You get that sense that you feel like you've met him before, where you feel like you have something you want to be passionate about, but there's so many things you have to consider before you really get into it. And especially for art, art's just really expensive. So you understand where Yatori is coming from, but then you also understand the other side of it too. So you just, it's very enjoyable. And I feel like for this first episode, it pretty much sets everything up, where you get a sense of everybody's characters and stuff like that. So I'm definitely excited about watching more of this. Looking forward to what's going to be next, obviously in animated form, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet since I was up late last night finishing my review of Blue Period, since I wanted to finish writing the review before I saw the show. But I have every expectation that it will adapt perfectly fine into an anime. And obviously you've read my review, so you know just how much I liked it.
Yes, I did see it. I did see it.
I regretted to inform Justin that I'd once again written a very long review.
No, let's go. Well, in this case, you had to review two volumes, so it makes sense.
But it was still like 1,300 words.
Makes sense, though.
With lots of pictures.
Pictures. And I actually... references. Boom.
There was something it didn't make it into the review, but in the manga, it's really cool that whenever there's a scene of the students doing like a critique, or you have like different students' artworks up on the wall for them to look at, all of them are like drawn in very distinctly different styles, and they're all actually drawn by all these different people who the creator puts in the like thank yous, the acknowledgements, etc. So I thought that was a really cool detail in the manga, and I'm not sure if the anime will replicate that or not.
I think it...
I just haven't seen any screenshots yet to see if I've seen that. Or if that would even have when popped they did up in the first step.
Well, I think when they did the... When obviously they had to do the painting, or the art teacher had to get the class to do the paintings, not just the general, at the start of the first volume, I think they're pretty distinctive styles for that one. Although, we'll obviously see more distinctive styles later on in the series. So, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay, is that everything? Then, I think that's everything.
Thank you. I think that's everything. You're done. You're already done. Meanwhile, I still have a couple shows I need to watch. Heike Story. Gonna try to catch up to that either maybe today or try to do it tomorrow. I'm gonna try to do it today, though. Miracle-chan. I've been reading the manga, so I already know it has that mix of, especially at the start, of horror, but then also fan service. But thankfully, the fan service gets toned down because it's more of the horror elements that come into play. So I'm very interested to see how the anime adapts those parts, because it truly is kind of a good setup in the manga. So I'm hoping the anime captures that pretty well. And I'm just curious about Ancient Girl's Frame, because this was like...
Yeah, which one is
first,
that?
First of all, this was a one that was lately... This was a late announcement for the season. And then, interesting enough, I did a little research into it. This, I think, is a Chinese-Japanese production.
Is it streaming anywhere?
It is streaming on Funimation, from what I saw. So I'm going to try to check that out either after the podcast or at some point today. I'm going to try it out, just see how it goes, or maybe catch some reviews of it. So I'll see about that.
Oh, I see. Oh, this one. I don't think it starts until tomorrow. Oh, yeah, I remember I looked at this one and I went, girls, you're going to need longer skirts, forgive me, in space. Like, those miniskirts are not going to cover your asses.
Uh-oh. Oh, well, we'll have to see how they do it in the show, I guess.
I say this as somebody who has been wrestling with making a clamp cosplay work recently, and just as Caitlin Moore put in my Twitter replies, those girls are, anime girls have no booty. They go straight from back to leg. There's no ass. But yeah, this show I'm also interested in, but it hasn't aired yet, so neither of us have seen it.
Right, okay. I thought this actually, I could have sworn Funimation tweeted about, I'm pretty sure, I feel like they did tweet about that being ready, but all
okay,
right.
Okay, maybe. Since it says it premieres on Tokyo MX on October 12th at 7 p.m., which would be like 12 hours earlier for us, so maybe?
I'll find out after the episode. I'll find out. Yeah. And then I'm still, the Platinum End one is the one that's, there's a temptation, Helen. So here's the problem. I've actually read like the first chapter of this years ago. I didn't really like it. And I said I was going to probably follow up with it more, but then obviously I never did. And then I also heard that about the ending, which I don't know what the ending is. I have no idea, but I heard it was bad.
I read a tweet thread of it, and it sure was something.
Ooh! Don't tell me.
That's why I'm keeping it vague.
So the fact is, this is a Tsugumi Oba and Takeshi Obata project. I have read Death Note and watched Death Note.
Who among us in this generation have not?
Yes. Yeah, it's obviously they have the issues, but at the same time, I have basically enjoyed both of those series in both forms. So the fact is, as all of the awful reviews and stuff I've heard of Platinum Man and my take on my views on the first chapter of it, I feel like I kind of have to watch this just see where it goes. And I have to hope that maybe the anime adaption changes things. And again, they're going to have to change things because this is a 24-episode series, but they're adapting 14 volumes. So they can't obviously keep everything. Can they make changes for the better? Am I curious enough to find out? I do not know. I don't know if I'm strong enough, Helen. I don't know.
I will say for that ending, any changes they make to it would have to be radical.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I do not want to watch this show. However, I want to watch other people watching the show. I want to vote for it in the ANN streaming reviews and then read the weekly write-ups by whoever gets forced to do that one.
Look, you don't have to be so cruel, Helen. You don't have to be so cruel.
I don't have to, but I want to.
You don't have to do it. Just be kind for for these people.
No, they get paid for it.
So yeah, I'm conflicted about Platinum Man. I may not actually pick it up. I'm leaning toward not picking it up because I mean I'm watching enough stuff as it is, and then there's two more shows that I'm curious about or I want to check out: Ranking of Kings, and then Komi Can't Communicate.
Both of which haven't aired in the U.S. yet.
Ranking of Kings hasn't aired. Komi has aired.
Is
aired already in Japan? Yeah, in Japan already. But obviously, Netflix jail is Netflix jail. So, but it's supposed to air the 21st. So in a few weeks. So we'll see. I'm watching you, Netflix. I'm watching you. But yeah, that's about it. For what I'm planning on watching this season.
All right. So we've got weird news, and because I assembled the script this time, there's a lot of it. So. I don't think this is really weird, but High Guardian Spice lives! Crunchyroll put out a new trailer for it, and they're going to dump the whole series onto their service at the end of October in one go. Freak Angels also lives, but the trailer for that looked kind of underwhelming. And I say that as somebody who read the webcomic. That was one of the first webcomics I started reading back in 2009. And at the time, the art style was just really novel for me. Since it was kind of in between comic book realistic and anime realistic, full color, lots of nice detail, and just none of that really translates especially well to being animated where, of course, you expect something professionally done to have nice detailing, you know, the art style has to change a little bit. It just looked kind of blah. I definitely had a hot take on Twitter, which was that stuff like that, or like the Critical Role opening that they dumped, it's like, not dumped, that got dropped also at New York Comic Con. Like, all these things, it feels like they put effort into character designs and animation, but they haven't really been putting effort into, like, setting, other visual cues, color schemes, etc. And all these are just looking kind of bland. You know, I've got standards, Justin. I've got standards.
Okay, but does the rest of the world have your standards?
I mean, I certainly hope so.
First of all, I hope they don't. Mostly because they're all different people. We're all different people, Helen. We cannot all share the same opinions.
I meant not my exact standard, but my level of standards. I'm telling you to get on my level.
I'll get on your level one day, Helen. I'll get on your level one day.
Whether he has to climb up or down is a different question, folks.
But no, I put this on the weird news because obviously that's been tortured and long history of High Guardian Spice.
To the point where the studio that made it, the Crunchyroll original studio they formed, no longer exists.
Yeah, so I mean, it was definitely notable. So I mean, just the fact that they finally have a day for it, especially since, by this point, they've had like X-Zorn come out, and that was trash of the highest level. So whatever happens High Guardian Spice, you can put that out. But I think also in general, obviously, it's technically early days for Crunchyroll Originals, and this is not to say like the co-productions have been successful. For stuff that they mostly done on their own. They never really made a dent, really. Like, they had Onyx Equinox, but I don't think that made a dent in anything. So, they had, like, Jibate. That didn't make a dent at all. Or they had a couple cultural originals where I don't think they've really been that successful. So it's like, it's been a tough kind of go for that program, honestly. So okay, gonna move on to from that to Odd Taxi, where we're gonna get, it's basically a conclusion to a saga that started in this over the summer, where the staff wasn't planning on doing a Blu-ray release for this, but then they said, okay, we got enough people demanding it, but instead we're gonna do like a campaign. If it gets over to 300 pre-orders by this amount of time, we're gonna do a Blu-ray release. Well, guess what? They closed their pre-order campaign with over 6,000 pre-orders. So I think the campaign was successful, Helen. Just throwing it out there. I think it was successful.
Yeah. Sounds like it if they met their goal and exceeded it. let's see. And speaking of other Kickstarters, we mentioned previously that Right Stuff and Tokyopop were having to do a Kickstarter to reprint volumes of Aria. For some reason, we're not quite sure what the reason was, but they have met that, so they will be reprinting it.
It's definitely Right Stuff driven. I definitely imagine Tokyopop was done with the series. I definitely think Tokyopop was done printing that series. That is my theory, my pet theory.
And then, oh, we've got a whole bunch of random stuff in here. Like, the Pop Team Epic creator has gotten a YouTube channel to introduce his cats, which I think is pretty great. He's got three of them, and I need to look up their names, since they've all got, like, very funny names.
Oh, no. It's gonna be something...
Their names are Ter-chan, Commanda-chan, and Poo-chan, and all three cats are named for films starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I knew it.
Which just feels very in character. Let's see. Ter-chan, Ta-chan, is named after Terminator 2 and constantly craves attention. Koma-chan is named after Commando and enjoys playing with their siblings. And Poo-chan is named after Predator and is the largest of the size and the best climber. So, yep, if folks want to see some cute kitten videos, go over to the Pop Team Epic Creators YouTube channel.
Yeah, if you want to do that. Also, if you don't want to do that, you can also instead go back to watching Pop Team Epic. There's going to be a remix version of this on all the streaming services. Well, I say all the streaming services. I think Crunchyroll said they're streaming it. I think Funimation.
It's definitely up on Funimation, yeah.
I think I saw High Dive streaming it. So it's back. And I'm like, wait, who wanted this back? Who? And it wasn't me, a remix version. I think they described it as they have a different voice cast for this.
Which is just the same thing as usual.
So what do we do to deserve this at this point in time?
Let's see. And then, just continuing on with the silly stuff. A Whole Alive performer makes weekly Playboy's list of next generation beautiful women. And this is the Whole Alive VTuber, Momosuzu Nene, who... I don't know really anything about her, except I've seen, like, one video of her where she says that she's, like, married to all of her followers, and so one of them sends her message saying, divorce, please. And so then she's trying to win him back by showing him pictures of herself or something. Just, like, cute pictures of her VTuber model. And it was very funny. But I have no idea how she got on this list.
When there's a will, there's a way. What that way is, we'll never know.
I did also think it's funny if you know, the stuff of idols. It's like, they're not married to anybody. You know, they're everyone's idols. But here she's like, no, everyone is married to me.
obviously, anime just continues to populate the social consciousness elsewhere. That includes the sports realm. In this case, the UFC realm, where we have Roxanne Modafferi, who doing a weigh-in for a event last Saturday. She did the Attack on Titan salute. It's like, oh yeah,
just like Attack all those Olympians really a popular. Couple months ago doing their One Piece poses.
Yeah, got the Titan one. Just what we all needed to see, and then I think there's actually more. Oh yeah, she also done a couple more Reading the article, Watafera is also an otaku and cosplayer and frequently posts about her appreciation for My Hero Academia, Naruto, and Attack on Titan on her Twitter and blog. Well, there you go. Got the thumb. She just thumbs up from for All Might. So yeah, basically, she's one of us, I think.
Yeah, sounds like a good assumption. And then in our final bit, like we said an hour ago, the mangaka for Golgo 13 has passed away recently. And just some funny news, his manga has inspired a camping manual entitled Golgo Camp. The publication is a collaboration of the outdoor magazine Beepow, and is a compilation of 9 parts of the Golgo Camp spinoff manga drawn by Yukiko Miyama, which is just very funny. It's how the legendary hitman deals with various camping issues. So you know what this means, Justin.
No.
We need to have a crossover played back camp now.
No.
The girls were having a problem.
Do not
subject Golgo 13 shows up and shows them how to solve it and then walks off into the sunset.
Do not subject these sweet girls and the camping. Do not subject them to this. Do not do
it. No, they just have a problem and he's just showing them how to fix the common camping problem.
You cannot be. This cannot be a crossover that exists. It just cannot happen. Just a meeting, Golgo 13. Just it just can't happen. They're too sweet. They're too enjoyable. They can't be meeting the legendary hitman like this. They can't.
Well, now that Justin decided to be a party pooper, we'll just wrap up this episode then.
Ultimate party pooper. Yes, you can subscribe to the Yoshi Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can add us to your RSS feeds, Spotify. Subscribe by email. You can check out the OSG Twitter at the OSG for any manga, light novel, and sometimes other relevant Japanese pop culture news. You can find me on Twitter at Kami_Nomi. Maybe tweeting some stuff.
More likely he's retweeting Fire Emblem fan art, but, you know.
Maybe.
You can find me on Twitter at Wandering Dreamer. You can also find me podcasting over on Manga in Your Ears. On Twitter, that's Manga in Your Ears. On the website, it's Taiku Podcast. That's T-A-I-I-K-U. That's where our podcast lives. Let's see. What have we talked about recently? Justin, I made them read The Apothecary Diaries, and so now they appreciate my wonderful daughter, Mau Mau.
So basically, you coerced them
to
read it?
That is the entire point of this podcast. The entire point of this podcast is to make ourselves read more manga. It is an excellent premise for a podcast. I highly recommend it.
Well, I also do recommend reading The Apothecary Diaries because that is a fun series.
Yes. I know that J Novel Club is uploading Volume 4 right now, and I'm just having to restrain myself. I think I'm going to review Volumes 3 and 4 at the same time, but I have other reviews I need to write first, so I'm just trying to restrain myself until it's time, and then I'll just read the whole thing in one go, probably.
All right, I'm just going to tease you. Things that happened to Mau Mau.
I mean, duh.
I mean, things.
Is this more? Does this involve more adequately sized amphibians?
Actually, no.
Okay.
but things are happening to Mau Mau more than ever before. So that is my only hint, mm-hmm. I guess. Because I want to be trying to vague because it's an interesting arc, that's for sure.
Well, until next time, then, folks. Bye.
Bye, everybody.